particulars of the lease finance agreement as to whether or not the legislature might want you to proceed. But if we approved a project, then the details come in, my understanding from here is you could still go ahead and do the lease agreement at that point without any further action of the legislature.
That'd be correct.
Commissioner, did you want to respond?
Well, I wondered if I could say a few words to Mr. Rubini.
Okay, just a minute. Okay. Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Zemaski named a bunch of projects that are out there somewhere in some stage of completion. Are any projects that might be entered into a lease agreement, in your opinion, presently under the status of being specifically approved by the legislature by law? I mean, whether it's Seward or Anchorage or Fairbanks or wherever. I mean, do any of those, in your opinion, presently have that specific approval by the legislature by law?
Not in the fashion identified in this legislation, though that might be an overstatement. For example, there has been legislative appropriations in support of the Seward prison facility. There's a blend between a legal concern and then the financial concern. And following the legal uncertainty surrounding the Anchorage office complex, there's a legitimate cloud as to whether the Department of Administration enjoys sufficient statutory authority to enter into lease purchase agreements. Not to say that the existing statute doesn't provide it, but that it's been raised in litigation, and that might pose a financial cloud on the ability to enter into public markets and issue debt instruments. Now, if you look at it from the financial concern, perhaps less of an indication of legislative support of a project would be sufficient to provide comfort to the financial community than would be required in terms of the legal answer, which is why it's difficult to answer that question.
Okay, that's another. To distill that, well, let's talk. You say Seward maybe has been. Now, how about Anchorage? Has Anchorage office building been specifically approved by the legislature by law?
No, it hasn't.
Okay. Was the Fairbanks facility specifically approved?
Again, there has been an appropriation at an initial level for the Fairbanks facility. Within the context of this bill, I would think no. It has not been specifically approved by law.
Okay. I can't think of any others. I want to know if this bill has the effect of ratifying something that's underway. I mean, that's really what I'm, and not that I'm for or against it, I just want to know if it does.
Right.
And you're saying it doesn't.
From what this bill does, no, it does not. But again, you have the legal level and then you have the financial market level, and there might be two different levels of consideration then.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A couple of the questions I have is a follow-up to Representative Oshoe. Your lease purchase could be of two types of billings, proposed billings or billings that are already in existence that you wish to lease purchase. Therefore, I could see where the legislature would have the problem of ratifying a concept under this proposed piece of legislation and then be held responsible for whatever the ultimate costs are without any future check on that. Is there any way to give tentative approval to a concept with final approval then once you know more about the cost factors and other ramifications?
Two responses, if I may. The first, again, is working on that financial level. If, in fact, the state comes before the legislature and says, we're looking at developing a project which is estimated to cost $100 million, and they obtain legislative approval on that basis, in fact, they go out to bid and the bids come in and it's going to cost $150 or $200 million, let's say, you would, in all likelihood, have disclosure responsibilities to the financial community that, in fact, the legislative approval was for a much smaller project. I think it's a practical matter. They're going to be back in front of you in any event, and I think it's the upshot of that. But with the practical matters aside, the question is there a legal way to impose further restrictions on the legislature's approval to assure that you don't run into that situation? The answer is yes. You could craft that into the bill. It magnifies the separation of powers problem somewhat, though I don't think it tips the balance. But it would be factored into that analysis.
Mr. Chairman, just one brief follow-up concern. I agree with what you're saying, no. I guess the concern that I would have is that in order to develop actual cost figures, you have to do a tremendous amount of work at a lot of expense. You're going to go through the preliminary design, architectural, and so forth. You know, if the legislature is not going to approve the concept, then it's a disadvantage to go through all of that cost for something that the legislature isn't going to approve. And then if, I guess what I'm saying is my concern is still there. It's in the matter of mechanism, I guess, of how to get to the actual place where you're going to make the determination of the lease purchase. But I'm agreeing with Representative Pichot here that that's a concern.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess the way I read it in going through it briefly, it seems to me that you would come up with a lease purchase agreement or a set of circumstances where you would take an office building, no matter where it would be, and you would have that project outlined, and with the understanding that it would be a lease purchase situation, you would bring it before the legislature in the form, I guess, of a bill or resolution. Did you not say that we could use...
It would have to be in the form of a bill.
And then that specifically would have to be approved by the legislature under the provisions of this bill. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So in other words, there isn't any, Mr. Chairman, there isn't any latitude, in my opinion, the procedure seems to be pretty well set out here in the bill, that you would come before the legislature and get specific approval for the project in the cases of lease purchase agreements. Is that?
That's correct.
You don't see any loopholes in that, in the language that's before us in this bill?
No, I don't.
Further questions? Thank you very much. Commissioner?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just wanted to make a brief comment or two. Obviously, that we're concerned with our Seward facility, and one of the concerns that I've heard over the last two sessions was that the legislature requested to be involved in major decisions of new capital improvements. We are in a little different situation than Office Space. We don't compete with Office Space. There is no other correctional space available to us. We have clear authority and appropriation by the previous legislature for roughly half of the money to complete this project. What we are hoping is this bill will help us to come to you to request and seek approval for the remaining financing of the facility, which would be creatively financed or lease purchase or lease with an option to buy, whatever the terminology. But this bill, as I interpret it, and I'm not an attorney, but would clearly require us to come to you, and you in turn would give us specific approval for this specific construction, and we would then be on our way. Essentially, we have half, I'm exaggerating slightly, but we would have half private money and half public money, and our project would be underway. We would then be out of your hair, and we would take care of a very serious problem that Corrections is faced with. So I think this bill, from my point of view, is a very positive one, and it does involve the legislative process.
Mr. Chairman, I might suggest, Commissioner, that if you were to go over here across the street, you could probably stand there and put a 20-foot chain-link fence around this building, and this would look just like what you need.
We have considered doing that in the past. Not this year.
Thank you.
Ms. Waring, do you want to testify on this bill? Does anybody else want to testify on this bill? What's the pleasure of this body?
Mr. Chairman.
Well, I would defer here. Go ahead.
I was just going to move and ask that we move out House Bill 392 with individual recommendations.
Is your objections?
Yeah, object for the purpose of some discussion. Mr. Chairman, I'm not completely comfortable with the language, particularly 25 through 29 or 27 through 29. And frankly, after the discussion, I have not had all my questions answered. And I'm not sure that indeed it might be correct. I think the idea of separation between the legislative and executive prerogatives is, you know, I think we all know what side we're on that, and I want to make sure that our side is maximized, I guess you might say, and I'm not exactly comfortable that this does it. And
would you like a day or two to look at it?
I would certainly appreciate a day, at least one day to look at it.
Okay. Would you withdraw the...
I have no objection.
Okay.
Bring it up there next meeting.
Keep it to one. We only got 2 weeks left.
Yeah. We'll hold it for one day. The last bill we've got to cover this afternoon is House Bill number...
we got some bills and stuff.
191. Yeah. I sent this particular bill in to a subcommittee, I think, with Cotton and Larson. And this particular bill deals with school construction. It changes the way in which the state reimburses school districts for school construction bond debt service and the way in which school grants are administered and funded. This particular year, I placed approximately $106 million in school bond debt. Representative Larson and Cotton had worked on this. Raises the current reimbursement rate from 50 to 80%. This particular bill would also anticipate another $1.2 million in FY86 to fully fund the particular program. Representative Larson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In relation to the subcommittee, the subcommittee did consist of myself and Representative Rieger and Representative Frank, and we did work very closely with Representative Cotton in his office. And I've handed out a memorandum here, basically, that outlines the three main points where we differed from the Hess Committee substitute. First of all, we removed the proposed school construction grant account. That was an account that was proposed by the department in which the legislature would appropriate a grant, and then schools would be eligible to apply for 100% funding under that grant. We figured, in light of the revenues and the future projections, that we should not be adding a new grant program onto the present one, and for that reason we recommended the deletion of the grant account here. The second thing we did is we removed the requirement that district construction programs must conform to the state regulations for total projects. Within the original bill, it outlined the guidelines that all projects must conform. The concept that presently exists today, we have the guidelines in which projects must conform, and it basically says if school districts want to do any more, they have to pay 100% of the cost for the added amount that they do. Under the proposed committee substitute that we had, said that school districts had to completely conform to the guidelines, or else they would not be eligible for any funding at all. And the third thing that we did is we removed the two-year lag for those who sold 50% bonds. In order to get the zero fiscal note that we have before you, Mr. Chairman, we set the effective date as July the 1st, 1987, which means that any school district which sells bonds or makes payments between now and that time will still be subject to the 50-50 requirement. In the draft piece of legislation that we have before you, Mr. Chairman, we also made a mistake here. If I could get this passed out to everyone, I'd like to suggest an amendment. This amendment should be inserted on page 2, line 3. It would basically add a new subsection. It would be subsection C that would state interest earned on a grant received under this section may only be used for the cost of the project for which the grant is received. The school district shall return the excess interest to the state. And what we have done, Mr. Chairman, within this bill, if a school district goes to bond, any interest that they earn must be used in the project. Presently, of course, we know there are oftentimes legislative grants that are used for school construction. This simply says, as a school district receives a grant for school construction, any interest that they earn on that grant must also be used on that construction project. So I would appreciate, at the time in which we consider adopting the committee substitute, that we consider adopting that proposed amendment as part to the committee substitute.
Is it line four or line three?
It should be a new line three there. Section two should be moved on down.
Absolutely.
Other members of the subcommittee or Representative Cotton may have some comments that they wish to make, and I'd be happy to try to answer you.
4:30.
Just before section.
Any questions that anyone may have?
Have you done a fiscal analysis as far as the 50-80? Going back to the three school districts that we're going back to, and they're Mat-Su, Kenai, and Wrangell, that sold bonds for school construction after 1983.
Yeah, we have
Steve
Holtz here today who testified in that. I might also mention, Mr. Chairman, that we do have Mr. Gary Thurlow, the manager of the Matanuskas, who's in the borough, who will also be available to answer any questions that anyone may have.
Is he an expert on schools?
Yes.
I think that your question was the effect of this bill on those school districts that already sold bonds.
That's correct. And
that's what this fiscal note would reflect. Mm-hmm. Since they've got the effective date not until 87, then in FY 87 would be $1,288,000, $1,250,000,
$1,293,000. Mr. Chair, if I may elaborate on that just a little, maybe I misunderstood the question. But say, for an example, Wrangell, which has gone to bond under the 50-50, and say by the date July the 1st, 1986, they have made one payment under a 20-year bond. Well, that one payment would be under the 50-50 plan. There would not be anything retroactive. But any future payments that they made after that date would be under the 80-20 plan.
Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one question on the fiscal note. Since this only refers to school districts which have debt already outstanding, I'm not sure why the dollar amount would increase in 88 over 87 and increase again over 80, in 89 over 88 unless they had some kind of a climbing debt service in their bond issue. If that's the case, I just want to make sure. The other comment I wanted to make is that in the subcommittee, we did not resolve the fiscal impact that Representative Duncan was talking about, but what about prospective school districts? There was discussion over whether, or prospective bond issues. There was discussion about whether the existing $103 or $105 million of school debt retirement reflected a bubble in construction, or whether there was another bubble yet to come from what we hear about what's going on in Mat-Su and elsewhere and regarding school needs. I think that in the discussion, just for my part, I was probably on the high end of the estimates of what the overall fiscal impact was. Most of the 100 to 105 million of existing school debt retirement costs reflects grandfathered in debt retirement schedules of 80 or 90% of school debt. And based on a very crude approximation that for each percent of debt retirement it costs you about $1 million, I think that the high end is probably $30 million for the 30% differential between 30% and 80%. That's strictly an estimate. I think that the Department of Education has a lower estimate, but that's, even with that, I don't think this is a bad program, so I still support it, but I think that does address the question that was raised last time about what is the overall fiscal impact.
Representative Duncan.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I've got a couple of questions.
Mr. Holt, you want to come up and then you have to state your name for the record?
I'm not sure it's for Mr. Holder, who is for you. 1411.015, Section 1, School Construction and Grants. The school district may accept a grant for school construction if the school district complies with certain requirements and the project is approved by the commissioner. That doesn't have anything to do with bonding, right? All that's talking about is if I, as a legislator, want to give the city of Rural Juneau $2 million for renovation and repairs, the commissioner has the final sign-off. If I put $2 million in this year's, if this bill was law, and I want to put $2 million in this year's capital budget for the city of Rural Juneau, the commissioner of education can require the school district to go through all these steps and also demonstrate to the State Board of Education, et cetera, which they do not now have to do. Is that correct?
No, sir. I'm Steve Holt from the Department of Education. The commissioner, the department, is presently required to approve all school construction projects. That requirement is imposed by 1407.020, I believe, 11.
If I make, and we have in past years, I never asked for your approval when I put $3 or $4 million into the budget for the same borough of Juneau. You're saying you approved that before that money was released to same borough of Juneau? I don't think so.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, if it were a grant to the department, irrespective of the agency to whom the grant was appropriated, the project goes through an approval process in the department.
But if it's a municipal grant to city and borough of Juneau for school construction, how does this impact that? That's what I want to know. How does Section 1 impact the municipal grant I might make to city and borough of Juneau?
On page 5, beginning at line 27 and a half, additional language is added to AS 37, which requires a municipal grant for school construction to be subject to the same requirements.
Which page is that?
Page 5, beginning at line 28 or thereabouts, Section 9. That requirement does not presently exist, even though there is still a requirement that the commissioner or the department approve a project.
I didn't like this bill very much to begin with, and I'm beginning to really wonder about it. This whole new Section 1 changes things quite a little bit. It really puts in the hands of the Commissioner of Education, as far as I can see it, the final, and the Board of Education, the final say as to whether or not money I might appropriate for a school or Representative Manster or anyone else might appropriate will actually be expended.
Mr. Chairman, if I may respond within my opinion of it, if public monies, meaning from the state, whether it's through a grant or whether it's through reimbursement of a bond issue, if state monies are involved, those monies can only be used in relation to the regulations that are put forth here in statute. In other words, if it has to do with a hockey rink, a planetarium, or something, those monies cannot be used for that.
That's not what I'm talking about, though. That's not my point, in all due respect.
Okay.
My point is that is in the normal capital budget process, I can make a direct appropriation to the city of Borough of Juneau for a school, or anyone else can do that. And I don't think that the city of Borough of Juneau had to come back for the commissioner's blessing at that point before they could expend the money. If they put together a plan, and I don't know what all steps they went through, public hearings in the community, et cetera, right, and wanted a school facility, and we didn't use bond issue route, but just use a direct legislative appropriation, I don't think they had to come back the commissioner and the State Board of Education for approval before they could expend the money, and this bill is going to require that.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, presently for a grant for a municipality or for a grant for school construction, there is an application process associated with that grant. There is
I'm saying when I give the money directly to City Borough of Juneau, I can do a municipal grant directly to City Borough of Juneau, not going through your department.
That's correct.
In fact, I prefer to do that in most cases.
Yes, sir. Associated with that school construction project is an approval process, which is required under 1407. So while they don't have to ask for our permission to get the money, they do go through a project approval process associated with the school construction project.
Well, what does this do different than that?
It would require all grants which are appropriated to the department to be subject to the same threshold criteria as projects for debt retirement. That is, those requirements would be imposed on grants.
And what does it do to grants that I might give to a municipality, directly to a municipality?
It would, under the terms of Section 9, require that those grants and projects be subject to these same criteria. That is, there would have to be the demonstration of a need and a long-term student enrollment.
Well, I guess I'm having just a little bit of trouble. I don't see a problem. Right? I mean, I'm not opposed to use public money to create certain criteria that how it be used. However, I'm also not very anxious to say that for any capital budget appropriation I might, or the legislative delegation might make for the school district of Juneau, that this thing could get wrapped up in some bureaucratic. I'm not saying that the department would do that, but that's got to go through some more bureaucratic hoops in the Department of Education. I guess that concerns me and why we're really doing that. I can understand the reason if we're going to do debt reimbursement, right? I can understand that, but if it's within the ability of the legislature to make a direct appropriation that we don't expect any reimbursement on.
Yes, if I may, Mr. Chairman. The notion from our perspective is that if it's a public school building and it's built with state money, then the same criteria and requirements should apply irrespective of whether it's reimbursed under debt retirement, paid for with a direct grant through the department, or paid for with a direct grant through the municipal grants.
Don't be biased.
The thing is, in the past, though, the Department of Administration has never administered the grants that we presently give out. Sure. We have not come in, and that's following with Representative Duncan. If I gave a grant for $1.3 million this year to Kivalina, which is in dire need of it, that according to this particular bill, that the school district would have to come down here to Juneau and do certain functions under 14.11.015, which in fact then would have to wait for this particular paperwork and lose a year to 2 years to construct something that I've given them as a grant. You have never done that in the past, even though perhaps you say 1407 says that by statute. You guys have never administered this in the past. And why start now?
If I may, Mr. Chairman, the same project approval requirement exists. It's not our expectation or hope or anything else that this process hold up a project. We already go through the project approval process. This would add a couple of three additional requirements, and those, I don't anticipate that those would require a time-consuming process.
Representative Ewing, first and Cotton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I share the same concern that the Representative Duncan and Representative Adams concerns on this bill, because I know in the past that I've certainly made direct appropriations that are grants to the municipality of Anchorage that does not specifically have to go through this procedure under the provisions that was outlined by the chairman, and I would have the same concerns that we would be putting in extra hoops in the present law and make it that much more difficult for that money to get to the actual school. And if that's the interpretation that you just gave me, you said that this would, in fact, have jurisdiction over a direct grant, even though it did not go to the Department of Education. Is that right?
Under the express terms of Section 9, that's correct.
That doesn't seem correct, right to me, that you would have jurisdiction over and above something that would be directly appropriated, let's say, to the city and borough of Juneau. Why would the Department of Education want to get involved in that, overseeing of that situation? I don't understand.
Well, presently, there is a requirement that every school built with public funds be subject to an approval process. Whether it's a municipal grant project or a grant from us or a debt retirement project, irrespective of the revenue source, the Department of Education is supposed to approve the project. So in addition to that approval, all we're suggesting here is that these same
criteria apply to that same project, which is already approved by the department?
Well, and I was just reading on page 5 here, we talk about constructing, enlarging, repairing, remodeling, equipping, and furnishing of public elementary or secondary school buildings, and I assume that the definition would be the same there. Even if you had to put in a couple electrical outlets, you'd have to go through some sort of a procedure to do that. It seems like it's a little bit onerous. I have a second question for perhaps Representative Larson also, having to do with the effective date of the bill. Would we essentially be going back and after July 1st of 1985, we would be responsible for paying a 30% increase over and above what we're paying right now for certain projects that are now bonded? The three examples were Wrangell, Mattsu, and some other.
Kenai.
Mr. Chairman, we would to this extent. Any payments that they made up to that time, the answer would be no. Any payments after they, after that time, the answer would be yes.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman, if I might continue, that means that we'd be paying an extra 30% picking up these three projects statewide. Is that, that's, I imagine, what the fiscal note is indicative of here, is that 30% pickup, not excluding anything else that might be built out there in the next 2 or 3 years.
Okay, the answer is yes.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, under the cost of school construction, we're not talking the installation of a couple of electrical outlets. It's the definition of cost of school construction and project refers back to a size of at least $25,000 or greater in scope for the debt retirement section.
Cool. Okay. Mr. Chairman, you're saying anything over and above $25,000, and in other words, any kind of a grant that would go to the municipality of Anchorage, the city of Borough of Juneau, would be over $25,000?
For a project which is covered by this, that's correct.
Maybe there's a way of excluding that provision that Representative Duncan has somehow.
Ripson Cotton?
Mr. Holes, does the department, when the legislature makes an appropriation to for a school project, for example, to the city and borough of Juneau, say, let's just run a specific example by you. Let's just, I don't know whether they got any money last year, but let's say just for the sake of this conversation that the city and borough of Juneau got $1 million last year, appropriated by the legislature to the city and borough of Juneau for a school construction project. Okay. Number, my first question is, are they required to comply with 3705.315,
which is
the grants to municipalities, where the state will spend, you know, they have the Department of Administration receives it has the money, they execute an agreement with the municipality, and the municipality has to sign a thing saying they'll spend the money for the purposes specified, they'll allow an audit, and they'll assure that it's going to be used for a public purpose, and that you'll keep 20% of the money until the, you know, that's what I'm asking you.
If it's a municipal grant,
yeah,
then I can only assume they do. We don't administer those, so I'm not, I would have to say it, I guess, if
so who gets the money when the legislature appropriates it to for a school? You don't appropriate money to the school district because the school district doesn't receive and expend funds. The municipality does, right?
It depends on where the appropriation is made. It can be appropriated to the municipal grants account, which is administered by the Department of Administration,
right,
or to the Department of Education for administration under 1411-100, or 010, excuse me.
Well, now, but the way this bill is, You've got section 9 says 3705.315. You add a section E to that and say that any municipality accepts a grant has to comply with 1411.015, or you can give it to the school, to the Department of Education, and then they also have to comply with 015. I see.
Correct.
So I think, Mr. Chairman, if I could just put this question in perspective here, the bill is got. You don't want to do this part about the school construction grants. You can easily eliminate it by removing section 1 to section 9 from the bill. If you do, if you want to leave it in there, then that should be you got to leave it the way it is. I think that there's some merit to doing it this way myself, because it would require the same kind of scrutiny for a cash project as you would for a debt project. So I think it makes some sense that the city of Anchorage would have to come in and say, here's our project, we'd like to get on this list to qualify the project. And so then when the legislature makes an appropriation, there's been some scrutiny on the project, and you're not just taking my word that the high school addition cost $18 million.
Under this bill, I'd like you to give me the debt service of this particular bill. I'll start you off with this year. We just appropriate $106 million, okay? For FY86, 106. Because we're going to pick up a couple of schools here shortly. Let's go. What is the debt service for FY87, 88, 89, 90?
For 87, 88, and 89, let me first begin with existing debt.
Right.
For existing debt, it would be the 106 plus the amounts contained in the fiscal note.
Okay.
For existing debt. That's going to vary a little bit depending upon the debt schedules,
right,
but there won't be any dramatic increases.
Is that 86 or 7?
Pardon me?
86. Was that 86 or
86.
7?
For 86, it's 106. For 87, it's 106 plus the million two, plus or minus any variations in those existing debt schedules. And the same apply to 88 and 89. For prospective debt, it's my understanding that the municipalities are contemplating the sale of around $200 million worth of bonds over the next 1, 2, 3 years for school construction. That's what I'm told. And that's why it isn't included here, because it's a guess based on voter approval and what the municipalities come up with. If that were to be the case, let's say $200 million worth of bonds were to be sold, as I understand it, the net cost would be about 150% of that, so $300 million, including principal and interest over the life of the bonds. If that amount is paid off in equal installments over 10 years, that's $30 million a year in payments. Existing liability to the state is 50% of that, $15 million a year. Prospective liability under the terms of the increased reimbursement rate would be 80%, would be roughly $24 million a year. Net cost, absent any other factors, based on all that, is $9 million a year. Less any savings which accrue to the state because of the increased constraints and criteria.
Okay. Don't you think there should be a cap someplace in this bill that the bond debt can be no more than $120 million? I'm just using that real figure, because with the declining of revenues, the legislature may not appropriate more than $120 million or some type of language in the statute. Well,
my personal preference is yes, I think there should.
Okay. The next thing I'm going, then you guys can get on. On the first page, line 26, the school construction grant may not be used for the construction of student resident hockey rinks. I'm not from Anchorage and Fairbanks, but they got some excellent curriculums in hockey there. And that caused me some problems to say not to build any hockey rinks, because that's a curriculum in school. But let's continue on to where I come from in rural areas. Starting with lines 29 there, however, a school construction grant may, subject to the approval of a commissioner, be used for the construction of a small swimming pool, tank, or water storage facility used for water sports. So what I'm going to do in Point Hope is build a water storage facility. And I say to the kids, there's where you're going to have your water sports, according to this language. Do you read it the same way I do?
Yes, sir. That's existing law.
Okay.
Oh,
Mr. Chairman, in that.
Fire protection.
Oh. Yeah, but Representative Ringstad.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've got some real concerns in this same section B on page one that you were just discussing. I think this is what Mr. Duncan was discussing earlier. You know, it says it's similar to the language that's already in statute. If you look in the statute in here, it says under section state aid for retirement of school construction debt. Well, that's one thing. I don't think the municipality should be going out and bonding for swimming pools and saunas and whatever, and build a great big swimming pool just because they know we're going to pay the nickel. However, over here we're saying a school construction grant may not be used for that. If the Fairbanks delegation decides that we've got a great hockey program and the school district wants it, I don't feel that we should be saying here that the commissioner can veto it if he doesn't like it. The governor can veto it if he doesn't like it. But the way I read this, it says, however, school construction grant may, subject to the approval of the commissioner, be used for these specific things. Up above, it says, a school construction grant may not be used for single-purpose sporting or recreational activities. I think it's bad policy for us to give a commissioner approval or disapproval of legislative grants. The governor doesn't like it, the governor vetoes it. The way I read this, we're giving the commissioner way too much power.
Mr. Chairman, our intent there, the intent of the HES committee, as I interpret it, was simply this, that if you wanted those things, there's no prohibition in the district going out and bonding themselves and paying 100% for any of that. That's the reason why we said we provided the same criteria for the grants as what we did for the bonding section of this bill.
For the district going out and doing it, what if I want to go out and do it, or the Fairbanks delegation, or the Anchorage delegation, or if we want to just write a, take our capital budget and build this facility, this, the way I read this, it says a construction grant may not be used for.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, if I may, I think maybe I have a solution to everyone's concern here, and that solution would be in two parts. And at this time, I would, we can't really move until we adopt the committee substitute, but I would suggest that on page 5, that we delete section 9. That would relieve, I know, Representative Duncan's fear and also yours, that in the case of a legislative grant to a school district, that grant would not have the same constraints upon it as what would be placed under the bond issue portion. The second deal I have for you, Mr. Chairman, is in the form of a more formal amendment, if I could have these passed around, that would provide, more secure cap. Within the bill itself, of course, there's always the cap that the legislature may appropriate up to a certain amount. The security, of course, that school districts like is that the legislature appropriates 100% of whatever their statutory level is. The last 2-3 years, we have been able to do that. But this amendment that I'm passing around right now would consist basically here of three different parts. On page 4, line 16, we'd insert the language that after evaluation, we'd insert the words in approval. But the main gist of the amendment would be on page 4, line 22, where we would insert the following new subsection. B, the department may approve requests for allocations under Alaska Statutes 1411-100 only to the extent that total allocations under that section for a fiscal year do not exceed by more than 10% the total allocations made under that section during the previous fiscal year, or $75 million, whichever is greater. As Mr. Holtz told us, that $75 million is approximately the amount of money that would bound an additional contribution from the state to approximately $9 million, or was it $8 million?
Roughly 10% of what we're presently paying out.
Which would mean then it could be as little as $7,500,000, which of course could be offset by those bonds that were also paid off at that particular date. So this would provide for a more secure cap than, and what simply would be done here is that the commissioner would have the authority to look at the various projects from around the state, and for the 80-20% funding, only those which fit under the $75 million cap would be funded that particular year.
Okay.
I've got to represent Samansky, Frank, and Duncan.
I'll pass.
Represent Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I can share the concern about the construction or the grant restrictions here, and I think it may have occurred more out of because of history rather than because of our intentions. I think we started out with a bill that had it in it, and we kind of worked it around and maybe forgot to take it out or something. I don't know. I know one thing. I don't feel strong about keeping the provisions in Section 1 in the bill. In fact, I think we're really talking more about school debt retirement than we are talking about grants. And I would propose that we take that out of there, because I think everybody would feel better about it. With regard to the amendment and a cap, I don't think that's a very good idea, because I don't think it'll work. And I think we'll get into a situation where we have the department prioritizing and the department making those decisions that have been historically made by the legislature or by the municipality based on the program set up by the legislature. And if we do set it up under the guideline where we'd only allow $75 million worth, we'd wind up short funding our potential need there by a real healthy factor. I guess my feeling on the idea of a good school construction bill is one that sets up incentives for communities to not exceed a reasonable spending pattern.
Starting on page 20, or line 24 through 26, actually through 27, we do tighten up the design criteria kinds of things that will limit the municipalities from building Taj Mahals when they should be building just a regular school. So I think the combination of 80%, or let me say 20% participation on the municipality and tighter design criteria will achieve what we're trying to do, and that is cut out the abuses. Thank you. Thank you. I disagree with you, so I'm ready to move on to Bill. I'm going to agree with you on the capital. Is there anybody that would like to testify on the Finance Committee substitute? Yes, Michael?
Explain the proposed amendment, but my understanding is to clarify section one. And Mr.
Gruenberg is here to explain the difference in reality on the legal aspect of that part of the law of amendments. Chair, Chair, Chair.
The next bill we have is Senate Bill 28.
this provides the training of those professionals who are required to report incidents of child abuse. Is anybody here that would like to speak on this particular bill? The chair will entertain a motion to move out of committee. House Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute Percent Bill Number 28, Hess, with zero fiscal. So moved.
Mr. Chairman,
is there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. The next bill will take up is House Bill Number 364. We have before Committee Substitute for House Bill Number 364, Transportation, by the Transportation Committee, an act relating to commercial motor vehicle license and safety inspections, which is right from effective date. This particular bill would require the Department of Public Safety to be in charge of safety inspections and regulations for commercial vehicles. This is the second part of legislation we are considering this year due to the repeal of agency commitments. The department has submitted a fiscal note of $210,000. There are currently no funds in the budget for this particular function. Could it testify on this bill as the chairman of the transportation?
Mr. Chairman, sir, I'll bring Mr. Canal there. I'll bring Mr. Canal there.
That's fine. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for such clarification of this bill. I am Representative Betty Keogh, Representative of District 6, House Transportation Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to address the committee on Committee Substitute for House Bill 364, Transportation. As county representatives of the Teamsters Trucking Association on Public Safety, I have committee staff draft House Bill Number 364, which establishes a commercial motor vehicle licensing and safety inspection program within the Department of Public Safety, Division of Motor Vehicles. We also have a subcommittee on this. I have provided you with a copy of the letter from Commissioner Sundberg, which states, as to management, both functions, referring to insurance and inspection functions, will be placed in the Division of Motor Vehicles and will be handled by civilian personnel. This assures me and anyone else who is concerned that the inspection program will be carried out by civilian personnel and the troopers will not in any way have anything to do with it. The only thing where the troopers would be involved would be on moving violations such as they are at the present time. They would not be in charge of this program if they're one of the greatest fears. To briefly address the fiscal note, the Department of Public Safety originally came out with a fiscal note of $418,000 for 86, $350,000 for 87, $377 for 88, and way up to $415 for FY90. We requested the department to rethink its position on that fiscal note as we thought perhaps they had missed some of the intent in terms of how much administrative burden they would have to bear. The Department of Public Safety then came out with a fiscal note you have before you, $210,100, $180,000 for FY87, and so on. I realize, of course, the fiscal notes are one thing that we really need to be concerned about. Another thing we need to be concerned about here is the fact that the ATC Commission has been dissolved. According to the initiative, we have to put safety somewhere and state regulated safety of the trucking industry. Therefore, I would suggest that if the committee sees fit or can do, zero out the fiscal note and place that burden upon the department. They will appreciate that very much, but perhaps they can handle that. Without their funding it or us funding it, we would lose enforcement on the bill. Enforcement is the prime thing that we're concerned with. I would also like to note for the record that although this bill has been listed as one of the governor's must-measures, at only one time do we have input from the administration. I feel this bill represents the wishes of the most affected and most impacted by this law, which of course is the trucking industry. Without the input, the Teamsters and the Alaska Trucking Association, I don't think we could have had such a workable piece of legislation. They worked together absolutely beautifully, came to a unilateral agreement on the bill, and Representative Pinalberry will go ahead and explain some of those details. As far as my concerns regarding this program falling under public safety, again, we'd like to direct you to review the committee minutes of April 18th, in which we held a teleconference to hear from the horse's mouth, the actual people that are involved, so to speak, the drivers, the truckers. Everyone that we heard that morning, not in favor of the bill, but favored the oversight by public safety. In fact, some of those testifying suggested spot checks. So the trucking industry is not afraid. They wish a safety inspection program as much as we feel the need for it for them. I might also add the Anchorage Traffic Commission also tested in support of our bill. I would like to bring the committee's attention to the fact that my committee, through an oversight, didn't put in necessary language to give the department the authority to change fees in order to change revenues, generate revenues. And here's where we may be able to work the fiscal note situation. One of the intents of our program is that the truckers pay inspection stations for inspections. The inspection station pays the department for the certificates. Thus, the state generates revenue, and inspection stations have a business to conduct. I might suggest adding the department shall charge and collect fees necessary to implement this section. I feel confident this bill addresses the concerns of those directly related to the impact of the safety program. With that, I thank you for your time this afternoon, and Representative Pinal very well, being the chairman of the subcommittee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The safety inspection program in this bill is similar to that which we addressed in House Bill 133, before splitting the air carriers from the motor carriers. The purpose of this chapter, the first chapter of the bill, is to put the inspection of vehicles in the private sector. The Department of Public Safety would have authority to certify the inspectors and inspection stations and be given the responsibility of oversight of the program. The actual inspections would be done in the private sector. Although you've been provided with a sectional analysis, I would like to address the bill itself and relay the intent of the Transportation Committee and how we came up with some of the language in this bill. Section 1 allows the Division of Motor Vehicles to refuse the right to issue vehicle registration if the vehicle does not have a current certificate of inspection. This is one of the most important parts of the bill simply because it just flat says if you haven't had your vehicle inspected, then you don't get registration, and without registration, you can't drive it. Section 2 of the bill provides a new classification for a person to drive a commercial motor vehicle. To qualify, an applicant must be at least 21 years of age, have held a valid driver's license at least 1 year, and satisfy the department's standards for competency and fitness. We discussed putting into the bill the standards for the license, but decided to leave the specifics of that to the department through their ability to promulgate regulations. We did voice at the meetings that we expect them to have qualified personnel giving the exam, and the driving test must be in the appropriate class of vehicle. In other words, you can't get a license to drive a 18-wheeler by taking a test in a dump truck. For example, if the operator is being licensed to drive a tractor or a semi-trailer, he should demonstrate that capability on the road to a tester within the department. We also provided for a grandfather clause to incorporate the 19-year-olds that presently are permitted to drive a commercial motor vehicle. This is covered in Section 4 of the bill after the definition section. Section 3 is the new chapter which addresses the safety inspection program. Since you are familiar with this section of the bill, I will briefly outline the differences between House Bill 133, the transportation version, and the bill before you now. Under Section 2832.010 of House Bill 364, titled Commercial Motor Vehicle Safety Inspections, the Transportation Committee has the renewal of the certificate of inspection at least semi-annually as opposed to 1 year. This change has been supported by the administration and the trucking industry and the Teamsters. We also provided in that same section that the owner may renew a certificate of inspection at any time during the office hours of the inspection station. That was clarification language that was requested. As your analysis notes, this was inserted so that inspections would be done at the discretion of the operator and not scheduled by the truck. We wanted to give the people who own the trucks as much flexibility as possible. Section 2832.020, addressing exemptions, was changed to exempt federal government vehicles only. An earlier version of the bill exempted state and local government vehicles, including school buses. Now we exempt federal government vehicles unless the vehicles are used to transport property of the general public for compensation and competition with other persons. This would include such businesses as Parcel Post. Section 2832.30, titled Official Commercial Motor Vehicle Inspection Stations, we have again included language relating to during business hours, which this time addresses when the department may enter the inspection station to inspect it to see that it is meeting the requirements of the Act. Both in this section and the section dealing with the certification of commercial motor vehicle inspectors, we have changed the language dealing with the appeal process and the inspection station or inspector having their permit revoked, so that we give the inspection station owner or the inspector more time to file a complaint with the department or appeal with the department, and we put a ceiling or a limit on the amount of time the department has to act on that appeal. We said that the permit holder has 30 days after suspension or revocation to file a written request with the department for a hearing, and the department has 10 days to hold the hearing. Our intent was to give the inspector time to get his request to the department for a hearing, but we wanted the department to be limited in the amount of time that it must hold the hearing. In previous bills, this process had been reversed. It was reversed. The section on definitions has been changed substantially after a great deal of discussion and subcommittee work. The definition for a commercial motor vehicle was written with the intent to address those vehicles that operate on the state's roads, including school buses, state or local government vehicles, and trailers 5,000 pounds or more unladen gross weight when they are connected to a power unit. Our purpose of this definition was to reach those vehicles which must be inspected. We didn't feel that state or local vehicles should be exempt, nor should a bus be exempt. After discussion on the trailers, it was brought out that the trailers that should be included are those which are 5,000 pounds or more, the flatbed trailers that are used in long-haul or local cartage and are a part of the braking system of the power unit. The committee also felt it was necessary to define commercial purposes, of which the language was taken from one of the Senate Transportation Committee hearings. Unfortunately, it was amended to the point where we felt it defeated the purpose. Our purpose is safety, and if you drive a vehicle of 10,000 pounds or more, unladen gross weight, whether you are in business directly or indirectly, it should be inspected for safety. Thus, the definition for commercial purposes is as you see it. Obviously, department is now defined as the Department of Public Safety and not the Department of Commerce. And finally, our last change was in the definition of freight. We've been assured that gravel and dump trucks are covered in this definition. Plus, we deleted the language that said excluding garbage and trash. Originally, they were excluded because they were regulated by the Public Utilities Commission, but we've decided that is really not in conflict, and so we now include them also in the definition.
A question I have, did you state to us that you'd like to see the new section as far as fees is concerned?
Yes, that language would be, thank you, Mr. Chairman, that language would be the department shall charge and collect fees necessary to implement this section.
Okay, and the fee schedule would come under 2832.025.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
The second question I have is, page number 5, line number 9, I think the department will be up next to testify, but they'd like to delete, B of that, is that correct?
Emergency rates that will be going out.
In our subcommittee work, as I recall, I think that they testified that they only performed about 1,400 truck inspections per year under the ATC or something thereabouts. I don't know. And that wasn't a very big percentage of the trucks on the road. And so I'm wondering, I guess I'm still concerned about trying to achieve truck safety with truck inspections.
Right, Ray. Answer question, Representative Frank, through the chair. The thing on this is the